Welcome to Shining Bright, the Farm Her radio show all about women doing great things. Women who are making the ordinary extraordinary. Women following their passion, taking action, and making a difference for themselves and others. Join me, Margie, as your host on Shining Bright by Farm Her.
Hello and welcome to Shining Bright this week. I am so glad you are all here with us. And we have a full episode lined up of some faces of Farm Her. And I know this is something that you've heard me talk about before. And my goal is that you get tired of hearing me talk about it. So Faces of Farm Her is a campaign that we started at the first of the year. And many people out there. So here's something, a little homework for you to do. Go check out Instagram and check out the hashtag Farm Her. There's like, you know, probably 215,000 uses of the hashtag Farm Her. And while that is a word that, you know, we started right here in probably this very room that we're recording this about 6 years ago, it has spread like wildfire. And there's some beautiful pictures and people sharing their stories. And I absolutely, it's one of my favorite things to do is to go look at that, right? And you will see all these different faces and they look so, so completely different, right? Like it can look like someone who has a few backyard chickens all the way to somebody who's got, you know, thousands and thousands of head of livestock on a prairie somewhere. So it definitely runs the gamut. And so we decided this year to focus on the faces of Farm Her and to make sure everybody knows that if you're listening to this, if you care about food, if you care about how it's grown, if you care about eating it, if you care about the animals that are raised, how they're raised, if you are a part of doing any of that production, if you work in a company that helps sustain all of that or provide services to all of that, you are a face of Farm Her. Farm Her is a state of mind is the way that we look at it here, right? It's who we are. It's what we do. It's what we care about. And it's about celebrating others. And so we have been sharing lots of faces of Farm Her, regardless of what their role is in agriculture, because I don't ever want people to get hung up on, well, I don't drive the tractor, so I'm not a farmer. Well, let's talk about all of these parts and pieces that go into running any one type of operation in agriculture. And it doesn't all look the same. So on our episode today, we've got a few of those faces. We've got Jessica Reel, who is from the Yakima Valley in Washington State, and they have a hops farm. And she is part of a generational family farm, and she has returned to the farm and is going to talk to us about what that's been like, what they do there, the diversity that they have on their farm, and, you know, a little bit about working with her family and coming back as one of those generations. And we're also going to be talking to Sarah Mock, who is the bureau chief for RFD-TV in Washington, D.C., and a young woman who grew up, you know, connected to agriculture, and she's taken a really interesting path. I know you're going to love to hear about how her path has wound around a little bit and where she's ended up right now. And, you know, she's young, so she's going to keep doing big things, but she is a really interesting and fun person to talk to. So, two people who are connected to Farm Her, one who, you know, might be in that production role, one who's on the side of sharing the stories of farmers and being a part of the media. But both faces of Farm Her. And on that note, I want to talk a little bit about you all, and we want to invite you to our I Am Farm Her event. So if you haven't heard it yet, it is June 17th through the 19th. We have some tickets still available, but they will keep going fast. I know it. So that event is right around the corner. And if you are even slightly thinking, ooh, that sounds interesting. I like what Farm Her is about. I want to be a part of this journey. I want to meet the other women who are a part of this or the other attendees who will show up there, then I would encourage you to check that out. So the first thing you can do is go to www.iamfarmher.com. That is a website for our event. And it is June 17th through the 19th in Des Moines, Iowa. And we've got a really cool lineup for you. So the whole point of this event is to help you connect and inspire, be inspired, and be empowered by the other women who see themselves in the same light that you do, regardless of what their face of Farm Her looks like. So you're going to see professionals there. You're going to see producers. You're going to see people from urban farms. You're going to see people from rural farms. You're going to see everything there. So if you wonder if it's for you, yes, my answer is yes, it is for you. So we're going to kick it off Monday, June 17th with a Farm Her meetup at Peace Tree Brewery, which is a woman-owned brewery right here in Des Moines. And then we're going to go into Tuesday, June 18th with a full lineup of amazing, strong, really cool women who are doing great things. We're going to kick it off with Julie Kenny, who's the Deputy Secretary of Agriculture here in Iowa. I'm going to talk to all of you about, guess what? Faces of Farm Her. And then we're going to go into some some new and different things. We have one of the top farmers markets in the country here. We're going to have a farmers market for you. We're going to have a focus on you to help us put ourselves before others. We are going to have a panel about how we can best take care of ourselves, how we can mentor and be mentored, body language expert, you know, all kinds of different things. So again, www.iamfarmher. Get your tickets today. We would love to see you there. And welcome to Shining Bright. So we are talking about, this is a theme for our year, the faces of Farm Her. And as you all know, that can look so very different. I always say Farm Her is a state of mind, right? And it is who we are in maybe one part of our lives. And so here on the line, we have a face of Farm Her that I'm super excited to talk to. We've got Sarah Mock, who is the Washington, D.C. Bureau Chief for RFD-TV. That was a mouthful. Welcome, Sarah.
Thanks so much for having me.
Yeah, yeah. So let's just jump right into it. So you cover ag and policy. You're based in Washington, D.C. for RFD-TV. So if anybody here is listening, they've probably seen you somewhat regularly on the news on RFD. Can you tell us, but here I want to talk a little bit about you. You spend all of your time talking about all of the other news things that go on in D.C. So can you tell us what your ag background is? Like, where did you learn about ag? Did you grow up on a farm?
Absolutely, yeah. I grew up on a kind of small hobby farm outside of Cheyenne, Wyoming. Did all of those ag things that we all did. I did 4-H and FFA growing up. My dad actually worked at Colorado State University in their ag department before he moved to Wyoming. My ag roots are pretty deep. He actually grew up on a dairy farm in upstate New York as well. So, grew up in Wyoming. I raised goats and poultry and lambs for a while. And yeah, really was involved in FFA a lot. I did a lot of speaking competitions. I really got into kind of the leadership aspect of that organization. And then I was able to work some ag into what I studied in college and did a little bit on that side. And then I actually went abroad for a year and did some food science and agricultural studies in South Africa and studied organic agriculture in India as well. And eventually came back, and I worked in ag tech in California for a little while, and now I am in Washington, as you said, reporting for RFD. So yeah, I'm at this point just trying to have every job in agriculture.
Yeah.
Then I'll decide which one's the best.
I was going to say, you have one of the most diverse backgrounds. So I told you earlier, I did a little stalking of you, and I didn't pick up on any of that. I should have gone to LinkedIn. It probably would have showed me all that. But so I want to go back a little bit. You jumped right through the South Africa and India part, and I would love to hear a little bit about your experiences in seeing agriculture in those countries.
Yeah, it was fascinating and I loved it. I actually decided to do that because I was going to college at Georgetown University in D.C. and I realized about halfway through that I kind of had made a mistake and that I wanted to study agriculture and that background was interesting. So an advisor told me, you know, there's not really ag classes here, but if you go abroad, you can take ag classes at like an international school. So I went to South Africa first. I spent 6 months there. I took classes in their food science and ag economics department. Mm-hmm. And then actually at the end of my program, I stayed on and worked with a informal settlement, kind of like a shanty town, to do a project to plant an urban garden with them.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, which was really interesting just to see kind of a community-based agricultural system and kind of hear people's stories. So many folks, especially really low income and impoverished people in South Africa, have agricultural backgrounds, and it's very much, you know, it's a country that's urbanizing very quickly, but mm-hmm. people are so closely linked to agriculture that, you know, I talk to people who travel thousands of miles across the country to try and, you know, get a better life in a city. But the one thing that they brought with them was plants
yeah.
with like the soil still attached because, you know, that was like the thing that most reminded them of home. So that was a really powerful experience in South Africa, kind of learning about,
yeah.
You know, all the potential in that region of the world. And then in India, I kind of did a similar thing. I studied economic development and then stayed on and did a project on organic agricultural extension, which India is a fascinating case of just a country that's developing so quickly. They're trying to get the best technology out to their farmers, but the difference between, you know, the really advanced cities like Mumbai, which in a lot of ways isn't so different from a New York or mm-hmm. a London, you know, 3 hours away, it's as kind of rural and undeveloped as you get in the world. So kind of just getting information and technologies and techniques out to those folks and trying to, I was there studying how kind of the government does it. And it's a really incredible process. And I think the coolest thing that I learned there was just that, you know, despite all of the challenges and all of the different information that farmers have available to them in the world, at the end of the day, even, you know, illiterate farmers in India are just doing science experiments. They're just trying, you know, what if I do this on this field and that on this field, and then I'll figure out which one's best, and then I'll do that on all of them next year. And it's pretty, I don't know, farmers are smart and intuitive and scientific everywhere in the world.
Yeah, I completely agree with you. And I love that worldly perspective that you bring to it. But I mean, I obviously spend most of my time, all of my time right here in the United States. And it is like a common language, right? Because at first and foremost, they have that connection to the land and they're trying to maximize their business, obviously, from that. But it's such an interesting connection from, like, you know, like the earth all the way through to making it work for a business and maximizing that. So that's interesting to hear that you have the same perspective outside of the country, for sure. Well, very cool. So you bring like a super unique, I think, input, or not, input isn't the right word. You bring a perspective. There you go. It's Monday morning. I can't talk on Monday morning. You bring a super unique perspective because of those areas. So very interesting. So what led you then to Silicon Valley?
Great question. So at the end of my time in India, I actually got a chance to spend 6 weeks in Burkina Faso, that's in West Africa, working with agricultural entrepreneurship there, just entrepreneurs there who actually got a chance to work with the World Bank and do some things to really kind of work on economic development. And in all of the kind of projects I did while I was abroad, I really felt like the entrepreneurs were able to have the most impact kind of on their community. You know, I don't know, maybe I'm a bit of an idealist, but kind of that real, just a real sense of being able to get yourself up by your bootstraps.
Which is what entrepreneurs do, right?
Yeah. And so I was really fascinated by that, by seeing that happen in Burkina Faso. And I kind of came back to the States and was like, well, maybe those people are also having the most impact here. Maybe I'll take a look at what's happening on the entrepreneurship side in agriculture here in the States. So basically I just came back in my senior year of college. I just wrote cold emails to dozens and dozens of CEOs of interesting ag tech companies, just asking for kind of, you know, 15-minute phone calls. I wanted to learn about their technology. I wanted to learn about their perspective. And in the process of just doing that and trying to figure out whether or not this was an industry I wanted to go into, I got a job offer. So I ended up relocating to Sacramento originally.
Wow.
And worked for a company out of Fresno, which was, I did that kind of 3.5-hour long one-way commute once a week. And an incredible way to see the just diversity of Californian agriculture, which I had never really been exposed to.
Yeah.
And learn a lot about kind of the technology and software that farmers are developing, how much information farmers are already collecting here in the States on their operations, and kind of how much of a absence there is of usability in that information.
Yeah, for sure. It is such a growing, and it's not even growing, it's already a huge thing out there. Well, we have to get going to break. When we come back, I want to talk about that technology focus and your passion for it and how you transitioned that into Washington, D.C. So everyone stick with us here on Shining Bright. We'll be right back with Sarah Mock from RFD TV. Welcome back to Shining Bright. We have been talking with Sarah Mock, and when we went to break, we were talking about her transition from India to Silicon Valley and the high-tech entrepreneurship innovation side of agriculture. And Sarah, I know in reading about you that you are passionate about this, so I'd love to hear a little bit more about your time there.
Absolutely. Well, I really dove into that technology kind of in the Central Valley of California. And then I learned an incredible lesson to learn in your first job out of college, which is that startups often don't work out.
Yes.
And I actually got laid off of my first job out of college, which was incredibly stressful, but also I think a really good life lesson that I didn't want to appreciate at the time. And then I got a chance to go. I spent some time kind of shopping around and ended up at another great ag tech company that actually sent me out to the Midwest quite a bit. And I learned a lot more about, you know, kind of the corn and soybean agriculture in the middle of the country and got exposed to a lot of different things. And I think that experience in a lot of ways sent me on my way to, you know, kind of blogging on the side and just being so immersed in agriculture that I just was really inspired to start writing about it and communicating about it.
Yeah. Well, obviously that sounds like it was somewhat of a natural transition into your next career. And funny, if I just looked up what percent of startups fail, 90% of startups fail. And that is a scary number, right? I'm going through an entrepreneurship class right now, and it only is for entrepreneurs who've been in business for a minimum of 3 years and have certain level of income and employees. And I at first I was like, man, that's like, you're leaving some people out here. And now I realize like they're trying to get through to those ones that they think probably have the best chance of succeeding because they're outside of those 3 years. So I'm sure that that's a common thing in that area of the country too, with all the startups they've got there. So, but on that note, switching over, so you transitioned yourself by, you started blogging, you just started putting yourself out there. And I can tell by listening to you that you are a person who immerses yourself and learns, and you're not afraid to jump across the country or the world in order to do that, which I absolutely love and have so much respect for. So the blogging, the communicating, and then that led you to what you do now at RFD TV. Is that right?
Yeah, absolutely. It was a very funny transition, and I guess a real nod to the importance of networking in people's lives, especially for young professionals. I had actually met a reporter that I had just like met at a conference once and had coffee with one time. RFD reached out to him originally and wanted him for this job. And he said, you know, I'm not interested in a change, but I did meet this great, you know, young woman with an ag background one time. And she seemed really interested in this kind of work. And I think she'd be a great addition to your team. So I got kind of a call out of the blue from RFD, and the pitch from them was, it was early 2017, a presidential election had just happened, and rural America had a really big role in bringing in a new administration. Mm-hmm. And RFD said, you know, if you're interested, we need someone to cover Washington, D.C. for rural America. And we need someone who knows the issues and can really drill down on these topics and give a kind of balanced outlook on what's happening. And, you know, my parents watch RFD TV, and it was a very kind of emotional pull of, it's a real moment to kind of sit at that intersection of rural and ag and Washington and kind of feed my policy nerd side. And then at the same time, also be able to have a real conversation with folks who, you know, don't really get reported to, their issues don't really get reported on. And it felt like a really valuable way to kind of add my voice to the conversation.
Yeah, for sure. You're right. I mean, RFD TV shines the biggest light on rural America, I think, that there is out there overall. And what a unique opportunity. So I have to ask, at first, were you like, what, be on TV? You know, obviously you said you have a policy nerd side, so the content didn't scare you, but did you have any pause there?
Oh, totally. It was funny because, the reason why, one of the reasons why my reporter friend, said I would possibly be a good fit is because he knew I had done stand-up comedy before. So he was like, she knows how to hold a microphone, so I'm sure she'll be fine.
Yeah.
But the idea of being in front of a camera was terrifying, at the beginning of this whole process. And, you know, RFD did a really good job transitioning me, and they gave me some training. They made me feel, like I could do it. And then honestly, a lot of it was just like, if you are smart and capable and you can have a conversation with someone, you can do that into a camera. Yeah. It's just about kind of getting over the stage fright a little bit, which I mean, is significant.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have kind of similar stories in that RFD, the same thing. They like knock on my door and they're like, we think you should have a TV show about this. And I was like, huh? Like be on the other side of the camera. And that was, you're right. I always say it's like a muscle that had to be built, right? Like, I was really uncomfortable with it at first, but try again, watch yourself. Fail, try again, and you'll get it figured out. So, so we're running out of time. Gosh, I could talk to you all day. What is the most interesting interview that you've had since you took your position in 2017?
Ooh, that's hard. I was very lucky to get the chance to interview, you know, Donald Trump.
Yeah.
In the White House. That was very cool. Obviously kind of a career moment,
right?
But I want to say, I actually just some of the things that I like the most, I've gone out to a number of farms. I've interviewed farmers kind of first person. I've talked to veteran farmers. I actually had a really great, probably the most interesting interview I've done was just with a veteran farmer who had a severe kind of like brain injury from serving in Iraq, talking about coming back and just the fulfillment he got from being able to get into farming and using USDA programs and farm credit programs to kind of start an operation and what that meant to him in his life. I think for me, as I am a policy nerd, but I'm also just a farm kid from Wyoming, and hearing people be moved by agriculture is just, that's like the stuff that like gets me right in the feels.
Yeah. Yeah. It goes all the way back to what you said about the people in India, right? Like that connection to the earth is a really powerful thing that I don't even know if anyone can break it down or describe it and what it can do for the human being. So you have a lot of tough conversations, I would imagine, all the time, right? Like you have to bring up awkward questions. You have to bring up things that are serious and, you know, emotion invoking. Any tips as we're getting ready to wrap this up for us on how you face those tough conversations?
Sure. You know, I think the biggest thing is just remembering that people don't like do the wrong thing on purpose, and just going into a conversation thinking like, hey, you know, I think there's a hard thing that we need to talk about, but I'm sure this person didn't, you know, this person that I'm talking to, this human being didn't do this out of malice.
Right.
So I'm going to put the facts out there very directly and say, you know, here's a thing that I know about or that I've heard about. Is it true, first of all? And like, it just level with me here. This is not I'm not accusing you. I'm not blaming you. There's no malice on my end either. I just want to understand.
Right.
And then being able to say, you know, okay, where do we go from here? And just kind of being very future focused, forward focused. You know, I think in that way, it's actually a lot easier to have those conversations than people think. A recent example, I got a chance to talk to a chief agronomist at AmBev about the corn syrup commercial at the Super Bowl.
Right.
And you know, standing with an agronomist, a executive at the company, and knowing that, like, you know, being able to rant about corn syrup commercials on Twitter is one thing, but having to stand next to a person and say, like, hey, why did your company
right
humanize an industry is very different. But when you remember that, like, okay, this this individual person did not make that decision. And this is kind of a broader conversation, makes it a lot easier to kind of move that forward.
Yeah, we can break it all down. Well, Sarah, thank you so much for joining us here on Shining Bright today. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Welcome back to Shining Bright. We are taking it all the way across the country from Sarah Mock in Washington, D.C. to now we're headed over to Washington State and the Yakima Valley specifically and farm her Jessica Reel. Jessica, welcome.
Thank you. Glad to be here.
Yeah. So any of you listeners out there who also watch Farm Her on RFD TV, you may recognize Jessica's name. She was on during season 3 earlier this year, and we visited her family operation, which it's primarily a hops farm. So Jessica, let's take it way back. Can you give me like the history of your family operation and just a little bit of how you have engaged with it from the time you were a little kid? You know, like, did you grow up in the family business?
Sure. So our family story actually begins back in 1945. My great-grandfather, Willie Reel, started the farm operations here in the Yakima Valley. And initially, he did grow hops, but he also was a cattle lover. So we spent a couple of generations with cattle on the farm. Following my great-grandfather's ownership, my grandfather, Jerome, and his brother, Leonard, came into the picture. That's when we got the name Double R Hop Ranches. That's what the two R's stand for, the two brothers. Mm-hmm. And from there, they all had children, and my uncle, my father, and Leonard's son, Steve, are now the principal owners of the farm. I grew up on the farm as well. I spent a lot of my summers working on the farm, mostly just simple tasks, things like pulling weeds, helping out around the office, things like that. But I went off to college in 2006 and spent about a decade in Seattle. And in 2015, I came back to the farm. Around that time period, the craft beer industry in the United States really took off, and we were able to expand acreage and had a lot of other new programs that needed to be administered. So I decided to step away from the tech industry and join my family here. So now I'm a fourth generation hop farmer, and I wear a lot of hats here on the farm.
You do. I do know that from visiting you. I thought that the process of growing hops and how you guys, how they're not manufactured, but how they're processed on the backside was super interesting as a person who, you know, consumes the end product. But so taking it back a little bit, you said that, you know, the change in the industry and the, you know, big growth of all of these craft breweries that are like everywhere. I swear, like I blink and there's another one, and we're in Iowa, you know, and in central Iowa. And it's, I mean, Des Moines isn't a huge town, right? But it's a city. And I'm like shocked about how many breweries there are just here. I don't know what the stats are of how fast they open across the country, but it is a definite growing industry. So was it just that family need that brought you back, you know, like, hey, we're going to expand, we need your help? Or were you kind of like, you know, I really would like to find a way to get back to that part of my life?
Well, it was really a combination of all of those things. In the Seattle area, there is a huge craft beer presence. And so I was living in an area where I saw a lot of craft breweries pop up. Spent a lot of time talking with my dad about the change in interaction with brewers and how much more of that was occurring. And initially, I was actually starting to think about potentially opening a brewery and using my family's hops to do so. But once my dad and I started to talk about it, he recognized that here at the farm, they had a need for some additional help. And so he thought, well, how about you come back to the farm, help us make sure that we can continue to grow the hops at the quality levels that we're accustomed to, and then we'll go from there. And to be perfectly honest with you, I'm so busy here on the farm just helping with operations on a daily basis, and I do have, you know, a wonderful opportunity to get to know a lot of the breweries across the country. So I feel like it's kind of a little bit of the best of both worlds. I feel like I'm a part of the brewing industry, but I'm also able to continue to help my family. So I think for right now, I'm just going to continue to work here at Double R.
Yeah, yeah. And I am so glad you explained the name as well. So Double R Hop Ranches, which when I was there, I remember I was like, why is this called a ranch? But it goes back to the livestock in your family. And actually, I think it makes it unique that you have that in your name still. So kind of a unique name there as well. So you came back to the family farm. Tell me a little bit about how it has been integrating yourself into the family business. And I mean, obviously, you work closely with your dad and your uncles there. And I know there's other family members involved, too. What has that been like?
So my role here, more or less, is to try to fill a lot of my father's daily responsibilities. He's involved in some other side ventures, and so the goal is for me to slowly take over some responsibilities and allow him some time to do that, and also just enjoy some of his time as well, because he's worked so hard all of these years. I came back to the farm with my master's in business administration, so I am best suited for a lot of what goes on here in the office, but that doesn't mean that I'm not out in the field. Actually, once we finish up this call, there's a few different baby hop fields that I need to go check on. It's really important to make sure that we're irrigating those appropriately right when they're planted. So I come with a lot of business expertise, but as I mentioned, I grew up on the farm, so I am happy to jump in kind of wherever I'm needed. And I guess the fun part about that is that every day is different. Some days I might spend almost all day in the office. Other days I might be in the field most of the day. So I actually really like that part.
Yeah. And I talk to women in a similar situation than you all the time, really, where they're returned to the family farm and they're kind of figuring out what their role looks like for today and also into the future. Do you have any advice out there for young women who might be, you know, a few years behind you in coming back to that family farm and what they can do to help integrate themselves and keep those lines of communication open with their family?
Yeah, I think, you know, the communication from an early period of time is helpful. That way, as you're potentially working on your professional degrees, you might be able to focus on areas that would be beneficial at the farm. But I would also say that you can develop professionally in other industries, and even if it's completely different than agriculture or farming, there's still a lot of great knowledge that you can bring back. For instance, I was a manager of a consulting team prior to my return here, and you know, we spent a lot of time interacting with our customers and providing service, and that's something that transfers to working with my customers now. I was able to pick up a lot of knowledge in human resources that I brought back to the farm. So I would say don't shy away from something just because it's not agriculture. Everything can be beneficial to you back here on the farm.
Yeah, that's so true. And in all of those parts and pieces, I'm a firm believer. Like, I've been at points in my life before where I'm like, why am I doing this? Like, how did I get myself into this job, right? Specifically like a situation where I was in charge of all the contracts for the company that I used to work with. And I was like, gosh, I'm never going to use this again. Get me out of here. But reality is that I use that all the time, you know, those negotiation pieces or even the wording or how to review those contracts. So I think that's a really good tip that, you know, pick up those pieces wherever you are and carry those with you because they can bring something to wherever you're at. Well, everybody, thank you for sticking with us. We are headed to break here. I want to invite you to join our Farm Her journey today. First off, you can watch our TV show Fridays and Sundays at 9:30 p.m. Eastern on RFD TV and visit us at farmher.com to read the stories in our blog, learn about the women who are on the TV show a little more in depth, and see the pictures that I take there as well. Also, you can see the event lineup, where we're going to be, when we're going to be there, and of course, check out the merchandise while you're there. Stick with us here on Shining Bright. We'll be right back with Jessica Real. Welcome back to Shining Bright. We are talking to Jessica Reel. And for those of you who might have just joined us, Jessica was featured as a Farm Her on season 3 of Farm Her on RFD TV on the TV side. And we're following up that conversation here and talking a little bit more in depth about some of these things. So Jessica, when we were out there filming, it was the tail end of hops harvest. Is that right? I think that's where we were.
Yes, we were just a few days out from finishing.
Yeah. Did you collapse after that? Because from like my standpoint in watching everything that was going on, it is like a 24-hour a day, like constant process. You guys are, everybody is just running at this because it's a really labor intense process, right? And you guys have a lot going on.
We do. And so we all very much look forward to the end and being able to celebrate that we were successful and were able to harvest the crop. But we do still have apples to pick even after hops are finished. But we do try to take at least a day or two off in between to relax and just kind of decompress after that.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that sounds like a super important thing. So on that note with the apples, I know you showed me a few different parts that bring diversity into your operation. Obviously hops are the biggest thing that you do, but can you talk to us a little bit about those apples and anything else that you have going on from a diversity standpoint?
Sure. So for several years, we have grown other crops, including apples and Concord grapes. As far as the apples go, we have one little orchard block remaining. Half of the field is Granny Smith. The other half is Pink Lady. And the Granny Smith apples are always ready to be harvested as soon as we finish with hops. So that's where we spend another week or so after hop harvest concludes. And then we have a couple of weeks off before the Pink Ladies are ripe. But also in the midst of all of that, we have the Concord grapes that need to be harvested. All of ours go to Welch's. So if you are a fan of jellies or juices, that would be part of what we are growing here. But those are actually very less labor intensive than other crops. We're able to harvest all of our Concord acreage with just 4 to 5 employees. So even if that's still happening, it doesn't feel as busy around here.
Yeah. Yeah. Because, can you remind me how many employees you have to staff up to during hops harvest? It was a lot.
Usually close to 100.
Yeah. Yeah. I remember thinking that is a lot of moving parts and a lot of moving little hops berries, or are they called berries? Is that what you call them?
Hop cones, actually.
Cones. Yeah. Lots of them moving around. So let's talk about you for a few more minutes here. You know, I am positive, and I saw for myself that you bring a lot to the farm. What would you say the trait you are the most proud of that helps you and the farm be successful is?
Well, as I mentioned earlier, I have to wear a lot of hats around here. I spend time working in accounting, human resources. I'm facilitating our H-2A contracts every year. I'm managing our food safety programs. I'm in the field. So I guess what I'm most proud of is what I've been able to do in terms of just balancing tasks and being able to distribute my time.
Yeah, that's a tough one, right? And I think on that note, I mean, you wear a lot of hats and you juggle a lot of things and you guys have these super intense, I mean, anywhere in agriculture that there's intensity, obviously in like planting and harvest time, right? But you're managing so many workers and in such a high value crop. How do you practice some self-care during these ups and downs and times? I mean, because like you said, you wear a lot of hats and you juggle a lot of things, but it's important to take care of ourselves too.
It is. That is so important. It's something that I think everyone should make sure they set time aside for. Even during hop harvest, and this is something I didn't learn until about my third year in, but even during hop harvest, I get away for at least an hour a day, and I usually try to sneak in a workout. This last harvest, I was kind of alternating every other day. I would do just a short little 20-minute yoga session, or I would do a short weightlifting session. And just having that time to focus on something besides what's happening at work dramatically helped me.
Yeah, it clears the cobwebs out, doesn't it? That's the same for me.
Yep, and any tension and stress, any of those sorts of things that are happening, some days are more stressful than others, and that has very much helped me, even on the busiest of days.
Yep, I'm with you. I think it's something that you can't almost put a value on, having that ability to let some of that stress and tension go. So what would you tell yourself 5 years ago if you could go back and give yourself a piece of advice?
Well, 5 years ago, I was still living in Seattle and working my tech job and traveling all over the country for that. Gosh, I don't know. I guess I would just let myself know that, you know, those late 20s of living in Seattle was a fun time and a great time to socialize and see the country, and that I better be prepared for the next half decade or so to be a lot of work and a tough transition. But now that I'm getting towards the other side of that, I can see that all of these efforts have been worth it.
I love it. So it's obviously your road isn't over in this. You've got a long ways to go in the family operation. What would you say will define success for you? Because this is something I always think about. Like, and people ask me this, like, what is success for you? And I'm like, gosh, like, that's a great question, right? Like, when is it that I can say success achieved and, you know, breathe a little bit?
You know, that's actually easier for me to answer than I thought it would be. For me, I'm a fourth generation farmer. My cousin Zachary is also back here at the farm. So I think success will be the day that Zach and I look at each other and we're able to run operations here without our dads. You know, we want them to be able to retire and enjoy their life as well. And when the day comes where we feel like we don't need them here all the time, I think that's what success will be.
Right. And I see you guys all marching in that direction, and I have no doubt that day will come. And so I'm looking forward to that for you. So if you could leave our listeners with one piece of advice for maybe those young women out there that are, you know, not sure where they're going to go or how it's going to shake out for them to be a part of their family operation, what would you say?
Well, I would say that just because you're a female, that doesn't mean there isn't an important role that you can serve at your family's farm. And if anything, when you do return, I think it might surprise anybody who may have had any concern over it.
Yeah, good. I love that, right? Like, you can make your mark, and despite what anyone else thinks, find your place there. I know that's what you have done. And I would like to encourage anybody who wants to see a little bit more of Jessica's story, maybe see the hop growing process or the processing that comes afterwards, you can head over to our YouTube channel. And that is the Farm Her YouTube channel, and look up the episodes from season 3. You can find Jessica's there. Again, that was in Washington's, you said Yakima Valley, right? I heard you say Yakima. I keep saying Yakima.
Yep, Yakima Valley.
Yakima. Those of us from Iowa probably don't always get that right. But anyway, you can see more of Jessica's story over there on our YouTube channel. Jessica, how can people find you online?
Well, we have a Facebook account. We also have Instagram. Instagram is at @RHOP.
Awesome. Yeah. Head over there and check out the hop process. Jessica, thank you so much for joining us today on Shining Bright.
Thank you, Margie.
Yes. And everybody, thank you for joining us. Stick with us. We'll be back here in just a few minutes, and we'll wrap up this episode of Shining Bright by Farmer. The engine light is on. The tail lights are out. It's probably not legal, but it's how I'll get around. Come on, baby, go for a ride in my door. I can hear the gravel hitting on the side of my door. Bugs on the windshield, smoke rolling out of the crack. Well, she burns through the wall about the same as the gas. It's not very pretty and it's not very fast. Welcome back to Shining Bright. We are wrapping things up after a very interesting and full episode where we spoke with Sarah Mock, who is the bureau chief for RFD TV in Washington, D.C., and Jessica Reel. And while these two women are most definitely very different, they're on First off, different sides of the country, literally, like from one coast to the other, almost. And they're different in what they do. They're different in how they contribute to agriculture. You know, one thing jumped out at me as I was listening to them, and as I relate it to myself as well. And, you know, Sarah mentioned, you know, she got into a college program and decided that she wanted to be a part of agriculture, but it wasn't at her school. So instead of, you know, feeling stuck, she said, okay, how can I change this? And she went and studied abroad, and she really broadened her horizons by going to South Africa and then India. And I can hear it when I talk to her that she just brings this confidence and this poise and knowledge and strength to any discussion. And I really do believe a lot of that is because she's expanded those horizons as it pertains to educating herself, right? She has opened up her eyes to how things work in other parts of the world. And there's so much value in that. And then Jessica talked about how she brought her master's in business administration, her MBA, back to the farm, and how that has really brought a wide array of skills and really a good thing back to the farm. And she's able to do her job maybe at a different level because of that. And it all goes to education. And so whether that's formal education, in what both of these young women talked about, or non-formal education, you know, I think it's something that I want to remind us all that matters so much. And so I have been taking part in a program through Goldman Sachs, the 10,000 Small Businesses program. And somebody approached one of my team members last fall at one of our Grow events and said, you know, I think Margie should apply for this program. And I remember thinking, I don't need to go back to school. I've got this. You know, we're running this business. We're running it Farm Her, and maybe feeling a little bit scattered and not 100% sure where we should go all of the time. Like, I've never run a business before. This was an idea that you know, grew some legs. And but thinking, oh my gosh, I don't have the time. I don't have the time at all. Like, literally, I work so much already that I am just feeling burnt out at both ends. But to some gentle prompts to go ahead and apply, I did. And thinking, you know, even if I get in, I don't have to do it. And so I applied, I went through, I went through the various levels of interviews, and I got it. I got in. And it's, when I first heard that, I thought, oh my gosh, I I'd given myself this, maybe you could just back out. But then I got in and I thought, okay, let's look at this a different way. I don't have the time to do this, but can I make the time to do this? Because if I make the time to do this, how could it grow or help my business? How could it help me maybe become less busy and better focused about how we run the business? Because I think none of us need more busyness, right? Let's think about what we can do to decrease our busyness and expand what we do at the same time. And so I went into the first day of class, not real sure what to expect. And instantly from the minute it started, I felt like I had found a comfortable zone where I could learn some of the tools that maybe I needed at this point, you know, 5 years into running a business, that I could use to help myself and to help the business. And so I'm telling you this not because I think you should go jump into this same program, but from a standpoint of, I'm sure a lot of you listening are going, I don't have time. I don't need to go back to school. I don't need this or that. And I want to tell you, this is a 12-week course that I'm taking, but there are so many things out there that you could immerse yourself in. And while sometimes it just seems like one more thing to add to the pile, if you find the right thing for you where you can connect with other people that helps take some of that burden off, or maybe you can learn something that brings ability to make a little bit more income at your farm, I think it's worth it, you guys. I think it's worth it to step yourself outside of your comfort zone and, you know, start small and work your way up. There's Annie's Project all over this country, and that's education for farm women, you know, and that's affordable. There's Extension that has all kinds of programs. And again, I am such a big believer, especially now, that, you know, sometimes putting yourself outside of your comfort zone and focusing on the things that you don't take the time to focus on every day is really worth it. So here's my prompt. Go sign up for something. Maybe it's a one-day class. Maybe it's a one-hour class. But go sign up for something, do a little something for yourself to further you and your business. Thank you for joining us here on Shining Bright. You've been listening to Shining Bright by FarmHer. Be sure to listen Saturdays at noon and Sundays at 1 p.m. Eastern on SiriusXM's Rural Radio 147 and the SiriusXM app. And now, go shine bright. Next week on Shining Bright, this is an episode you won't want to miss. We're talking about overcoming, and we're going to be talking with a therapist, Sarah Cohen, in the studio. And this is Mental Health Month, and so we're going to focus on some ways that we can help better take care of ourselves and our mental, emotional health. So join us next week on Shining Bright by FarmHer.